I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Hold on, ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And welcome back to the Fit Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down. All right, yo, shop talk right in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Well, only the realest come and do their podcast. You hear me? If you didn't, you better listen faster, suckers. Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you for being back on the Fix Sports Podcast with your homeboy. I love y'all. You know what I'm talking about? All the people who support the Fix, say one time for y'all people. Put your hands in the air and your dead air, shake around like you just don't care. Hey, man, I was out. We had a community barbecue and pool party for kids today, and I ripped my goddamn pants. Not like I had tight pants on and did a split. Now I don't want to put no images in your mind like that. That ain't what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, I was sitting on the tailgate of this truck, and it was this edge piece, and something told me, like, be careful how you move on this truck because you're going to rip your pants. God damn it, lo and behold, I done ripped my pants, and I'm a back. Somebody called it your back thigh. I heard some country-ass person said, man, your back thigh hurt, but my hamstring. I'm going to be anatomically correct, my hamstring. But for all my hood people, my back thigh, it was all out. Got my back thigh all out. But, you know, I'm here, I'm ready, and my back thigh straight. So let's go ahead and make this happen. But before we get into it, remember that the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the songs of unsung heroes of the African diaspora is delivered to you through the African History Book Series, the African History Blog Series, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as lectures, educational sessions, keynote speaking sessions, all that available. And also, On the Shoulders of Giants has online courses that are now available on Patreon. So you become a patron, and you become a patron under the tier for the online courses, and you can sign up to a monthly fee, pay your monthly fee, and get your online courses. So be down, stay down, roll down with On the Shoulders of Giants. Remember, visit the website at www.onthesoulders1.com or go to the Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. Once again, the website is www.onthesoulders1.com. The Patreon is www.patreon.com/OTSOG. On the Shoulders of Giants, baby. Really going down. All right. Episode 12. Here we talking about today, Joe. Well, let me go ahead and tell your goddamn man what we talking about, right? So, HBCU Spotlight got one spotlight, two news things, right? So, HBCU Spotlight, shine that spotlight on Jackson State's SGA President Jordan Jeffries, because according to the article, shoot, he do it all. It's one time for Jordan Jeffrey. We're going to talk about him. HBCU News, former FSU quarterback DeAndre Bolt, the hell you doing, Francois, is headed to an HBCU? Question mark. So I heard this on the radio the other day that said, I forgot which HBCU, but that DeAndre Francois was supposed to be going to HBCU. So, I thought he was going to FAU, but I guess not. One of them FAU, FIU, or Hell on You, something, I don't know. Also, up there at Grambling, they are unveiling the Doug Williams Drive on the campus. So they're showing homage or reverence, and they're paying homage and showing reverence to the first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl. One time for Mr. Douglas Williams. All right, so we get into the stories. A young lady named Kia Collier is the owner and general manager of St. Louis Surgeon. Of course, you know she's a black woman, so I got to talk about her being the owner and general manager of the St. Louis Surgeon. Most of y'all are like, who the hell is the St. Louis Surgeon? Well, guess what? You're going to goddamn find out. So, boxer Javonte Davis dominates Ricardo Nunez, and he gets him with the second-round TKO, so I'm going to talk about that. Another further boxing news, sad boxing news, a boxer named Maxim Dadashev, I might have said his last name wrong, I'm sure I did, Dadashev, he suffered a brain injury during a boxing match and actually died, and he was only 28 years old. So I'm going to talk about that, pay some respect. Don't get into the WNBA All-Star Weekend with the ladies did. Shout out to my wife, Maya Moore. That's my wife. We got two kids. So, we'll also talk about the 2019 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame inductee. All right, then get into the NFL. Every summer they do their top 100, so we're going to tell you where they at in the top 100 and tell you who where they at. So, last couple stories. Well, my two warm-ups before my Monday round, I got warm-ups. So, the NBA is investigating whether salary cap violations occurred during the 2019 free agency. And I heard they're trying to come after Kawhi. So we're going to really find out some more. Goddamn Steve Kerr, the coach of the Warriors, Steve Kerr, acting like a little bitch. He don't want the players to have the ability to force trades. He said that's bad for the game, that the players can force trades. He think only the team should be able to force trades. So we're going to get into that. And my Monday rant is aimed at a brother who is the ex-band director at Southern, and they say he nearly pocketed $300,000 in 5 false invoices. And he looked like his name is, what do he look like? A Thurgood or something like that. That's what he looked like, his name. But, you know, we're going to let him have it in that Monday rant, stealing from the school and all that stuff there. But, you know. We don't like his kind around here stealing and shit. Fuck ass bitch. Always like stealing and shit. We don't need your stealing. We don't need your stealing around here, brother, because we're good, respectful HBCU around here, brother. You know what I'm saying, brother? And we don't need your kind stealing from our school, brother. But with all that being said, that right there makes you put your hands in the air. You know what I'm talking about? HBCU Spotlight. So, from the gridiron to the classroom, Jackson State's SGA president, Jordan Jeffries, does it all. That's the headline from the HBCU Game Day website, right? So, let me go ahead and read this to you. So, when incoming freshman students enter the doors of colleges and universities each fall, various faculty, staff, and the student leaders greet them with excitement and encourage them to get involved on campus. While some students quickly take heed to their advice, others remain to themselves and stay within their comfort zone until the semester begins to unfold. The typical behavior of a new student. Eager and excited in the fall of 2016, Jackson State wide receiver Jordan Jefferson walked down Gibbs Green Memorial Plaza, which runs through the heart of campus at Jackson State University, to begin the next chapter of his life on what he knew would be challenging because so many things he wanted to do. Now, this is, oh, he's at Jackson's. Oh, okay, I was thinking about Southern from the Spilling brother, the brother who was spilling in the bow tie. Never mind. Eager and excited. Oh, I just read that. I'm fucking up. Jefferson, a native of Jackson, Mississippi, and the son of a former JSU offensive coordinator, Joe Jefferson, could not have been happier to play the game that he loved since he was 9 at the same place his father coached in 2005. I was excited because football was my first love, Jefferson said. Because being that my father was a former coach, his influence made me love the sport. Playing for the home team, too, it was all just exciting. Incoming athletes to college, like other incoming students, come with growing pains, like dealing with new scenery. I fucked that one up. Dealing with new sceneries and navigating a different lifestyle from a set schedule of high school. From meeting people to getting adjusted to classes, understanding the level of discipline and dedication of being a college athlete is also a huge task. Jefferson, however, is not your typical student or college athlete. Academic excellence has always been an important factor for Jefferson. I know there's a certain lifestyle. I would like to live in a certain person I would like to be, Jefferson said. If I don't fulfill those goals in the classroom, I will not fulfill my purpose. From his very first days on campus in orientation, the young Jefferson channeled his inner ambition for creating change and impacting students through his time at Callaway High School, where he served as the vice president of the Student Government Association, along with playing football and soccer, running track, and finishing as the valedictorian of his class. It was a student orientation when that spark for impact and leadership was set afire in Jefferson to continue what he started from high school. I know I wanted to be SGA president when our president at the time, Kendall Bunch, spoke, Jefferson said. I saw his passion for the university and felt that through myself. While Jefferson, a hometown kid, held big aspirations for continuing to develop his leadership skills, he would have never thought that he would witness it 3 years later, especially considering the twist in the journey that all too often comes with life. Adversity is the greatest preparation for success, and Jefferson is no stranger to it. The 5'9", 180-pound Jefferson waited 1,078 days to dress out in his first collegiate game for the Tigers after redshirting his freshman season. Jefferson fractured his ankle during his sophomore season and was forced to sit out another year. It wasn't until late into the 2018 campaign that he would put the blue and white uniform on, a moment that he would never forget. A lot of people ask me why I did not quit, Jefferson said. And Jefferson replied, because I'm not a bitch. No, I'm just playing. He didn't say that. When I start something, I finish it. When you love something, you feel differently about it. That's what Jefferson really said. With questions of uncertainty and doubt as to whether he would play on a consistent basis on the gridiron, Jefferson used those 1,078 days to also do other things he loved, being involved in serving others through organizations. While others may have been simply going to class and dealing with training and workouts to ensure the possibility of playing on the field, Jefferson zoned into his other niche off the field to serve others. Jefferson is pursuing a degree in political science as a member of the Phi Alpha Delta Law Fraternity International, the Fannie Lou Hamer Pre-Law Society, the JSU Student Government Association, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the JSU State Honors Health Club, the JSU Pre-Alumni Council, and the NAACP. His involvement in these organizations, particularly his fraternity and having served as the vice president of the Student Government Association as a junior, led him to run for president of the student body, something that he first glimpsed in freshman orientation. Being part of that fraternity held me accountable and taught me to be a leader sometimes when you don't want to be Jefferson Smith. So, in a nutshell, the article is far long, but in a nutshell, young Jefferson is balling on and off the field. He faced adversity, but overcame his adversity 1,078 days. But in those 1,078 days, he found other things to do with his time to occupy his mind and keep that competitive fire burning deep down inside of his body. And when he stepped on the field, he conquered it with pure vengeance and merciless rage in his eyes as he gave his opponents the business. So with that being said, and more that can be said by young Master Jefferson, I want all of you people to get up off of your seats and put our hands together for Master Jefferson. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Master Jefferson, your whores are here. I'm sorry, I just want to say that. But one time for Jordan Jefferson, for showing up, showing out, and being down. Came, hey, dog, you got to come up and come down. And my dog is doing that on and off the field. Jordan Jefferson, and that is so that's the end of our HBCU spotlight. So, on to our HBCU notes. That boy, DeAndre Boyle, the hell are you doing, Francois? Maybe going to play football for HBCU. Hampton could be heading into the Big South with a new big gun, or someone is blowing smoke. What kind of smoke? Weed, K2, cigarettes? You know, Newports, you know what I'm talking about. Former Florida State quarterback DeAndre Francois looks to be headed to Hampton, according to a report from the NoGameDay.com. Oh, yeah? Hampton, Virginia? Oh, yeah? Y'all might get Francois. However, Orlando Sentinel FSU beat reporter Chantel Powell says the report is false. Powell is a Hampton alumni. So this is her tweet from Chantel Powell. She spelled her name C-H-A-U-N-T-E apostrophe L. So that's Chantel. Hey, Chantel! Multiple sources at Hampton have told me that former FSU quarterback DeAndre Francois is not transferring in. Not sure where that rumor started, but it is in fact false. The redshirt senior was dismissed from FSU after his then girlfriend posted an Instagram video. Y'all remember I played on him, accusing him of abuse in February. His girlfriend, Diamond Lindsay, later admitted the video was misleading and apologized to him. Diamond, hello. Francois originally announced he would be transferring to Florida Atlantic University. That's what I said, following the season. But that never happened. He was reportedly interested in Alabama State University, or SWAT. And the internet all but had him suited and booted in the black and gold, but that never happened. Now, this 6'1", 185-pound Orlando native started two seasons at FSU with his best season coming as a freshman in 2016, where he threw for 20 touchdowns, 3,300 yards, 59% completion. So last season he had 2,700 yards, 15 touchdowns, 12 picks. So we don't know what the hell is going on with DeAndre, but what the hell are you doing, Francois? But according to Sean Fed, he ain't going to help me. But according to some reports, he's going to help me. So I don't know. But that's HBCU news, dog. And further HBCU news, a legitimate quarterback was a legitimate champion. Shade! That shade towards you, DeAndre. Hey, what are you doing, Francois? All right, so a second HBCU news story is about Doug Williams, and a road was named after him on the campus of Grambling University, right? More than 40 years after making a name for himself at Grambling, Doug Williams now has got his own real estate on the campus. The former Tiger Super Bowl MVP had a street named after him at his alma mater's campus Friday. Doug Williams Drive is the newest street in the school's historic campus. And this is my Doug Williams voice. To have a street named you and to be there for years to come, when I'm gone, they can remember that my daddy did something great at Grambling State University along with his teammates. That's what Doug Williams told the news on Friday. I don't look at it as overdue, and people are going to do what they feel like they should do, right? Like they said in church, you know what I'm saying? It might not come when you want it to, but it be there right on time. I said he's an all-time God. Yes, he is. Excuse me, I got carried away. Excuse me. I look at it, take it in stride, and I'm humbled by it. There's so many other guys that have come before me and after me that deserve the same platform that I received today, said Doug Williams. On hand for the ceremony were other Grambling legends like Willis Reed and Burt Jones, along with current Tigers coach Broderick Fobbs, one time for Brod, best known as the first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl. You know! Williams first turned heads at Grambling, where he received Heisman votes while playing under legendary Eddie Robinson. What time for Eddie Robinson? Check out my own show, John, for Eddie Robinson. He later returned to coach the program, leading it to multiple SWAC and HBCU national titles. People that go to school here don't have a clue about the people that come before them. When they said Doug Williams Drive, some would come here and not know who Doug Williams is. But they got the phone and they can Google Doug Williams, Williams said. And they do the same for Willis Reed, the Buck Buchanan, Ernie Ladd, Willie Brown. They'll find out the same thing. They just went to an institution where a lot of great people went. You better put your motherfucking name on it. Right? That's what I'm talking about, man. That got me fired up right there. I ain't gonna lie. Because it may not come when you want it, but it be there right on time. I said he's an on time God. Yes, he is. Oh, 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 baby, on time. Oh. All right. Let's talk some balls. Stuff. Let's talk some boss stuff. Who a boss? Who's a boss? You a boss? Because I'm a boss. Is you a boss? Is you a boss, Kawhi? You a boss? No, I'm not. But hey, guess who is? Khalil Collier. Khalil Collier is a boss. Who is Khalil Collier, you ask? Better get your motherfucking mind right. Sit down and sit back while I go ahead and lace you with this, right? The evolution of women's sports. The evolution of women's sports. The pioneer and trailblazer, Khalil Collier, is the owner and general manager of the St. Louis-owned women's professional basketball team, the St. Louis Surge. Khalil has taken on the challenge of building the first sustainable women's franchise in St. Louis. Her team is going into its fifth season, finishing as national champions in 2014 and second in the nation in this past season. Khalil Collier is a recent recipient of 30 Under 30 Glamour Missouri Woman of the Year awardee and was a prestigious Jack Butt awardee for her community impact. You better get your mind right. You act like you know who Khalil is, because if you don't know who Khalil is, you're finna learn about who Khalil is. So through this journey, she has maximized corporate and organizational relationships, develop supporter and donor programs, as well as position the organization for imminent growth. A St. Louis native with a deep commitment to the city, Carter is an entrepreneur dedicated to her franchise. I said she's a strong believer that St. Louis can support a women's franchise and is working hard to see her vision through. Delving into sports management, she has taken on the task of rebranding the face of women's athletics through the St. Louis Surge. Carter has developed a strategic business model partnering with prominent executives, corporations, and nonprofits to build the Surge's brand and develop new initiatives by encompassing the community, instilling the notion that all Surge players are leaders and mentors in the community. Kaya has personally represented the Surge organization through her personal community service work and by giving back to the youth and performing a platform for women's athletics. I said, with a history in basketball, Carter began playing at the age of 5 and continued on through her high school and collegiate careers. I said, Carter was a Division I recruit in high school and later attended Columbia College in Columbia, Missouri, where she was a shooting guard for 2 years. I said, bam, bam, swish in your face. She finished her basketball career at Missouri Baptist University. Carter obtained a bachelor's science degree in communications from Missouri Baptist University and currently works for the St. Louis Surge full-time as the owner and general manager, as well as leading the St. Louis University Institute for Private Business. Who's the boss? I said, Kalia's the boss. I said, who's the boss? I said, Kalia's the boss. I said, who's the boss? I said, Kalia's the boss. Call your values leadership, hard work, education, excellence, and sportsmanship. All the reasons she believes the Surge will succeed as both an organization and a professional team. When asked why she took over ownership of the St. Louis Surge, Collier stated, now is the time for St. Louis to build the platform and lead the evolution of women's sports through creative, innovative, and strategic processes. Get your Mickey freaking mind right. I present to you the incomparable Kalia. Boy, if you look at me like that again, I put these knuckles across your face, call you. Put your hands together for Kalia. When I say cuh, y'all say Leah, cuh, cuh. When I say cuh, y'all say Leah, cuh, cuh. When I say buh, y'all say ouse, buh, buh. When I say buh, y'all say ouse, buh, buh. Going down. Now I love doing this podcast for stories like that. I got to have the hypest sports podcast in history, though. Y'all ain't messing with me, man. Y'all ain't messing with the God. The arms too short, the podcast of God, man. Look. Y'all going to see me on the big screen doing this watch. Because I'm live like that. But anyway, y'all saw that boxing match last night. Y'all saw the boxing match. Javante Davis versus Ricardo Nunez. And somebody got their whoop in the box smell at night. Somebody got their whoop. I said, somebody got their whoop in the box smell at night. Somebody got their whoop by Javante Davis. Second round TKO. I think you better let it go. Let it go, Ricardo. Your ass got a mother loving ticket. So, I just watched the fight not too long ago, but I read the stuff earlier. Watched the fight not too long ago. So, a second round knockout. All right, so as the fight started, the first round, Javante did a good job of working his jab on Ricardo. He did a good job of working that jab and kind of, you know, feeling things out, getting a little test on him, kind of letting him know that he had that pop. Nice jab into the body. Good usage of the jab to get a couple of headshots, but he was really concentrating on that body a lot in that first round. He did a lot of body work, like a couple bop, 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 bops. Well, he didn't do that, but he had a good couple good snap jabs to the body. Worked the jab pretty good. He controlled the first round. Javante Davis won the first round. Ricardo Nunez was doing his best to show that his skill set is comparable to Javante Davis, even though nobody expected Nunez to really win the fight. But nevertheless, Ricardo was there, right? So, you know, first round, bam, jabs. Jabs, filling each other out. Not a real dominant round, but a controlled round by Davis. And had a good first round, real good first round. Jab, 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 body shot, jab, body shot, body shot, jab, body shot, body shot, jab, 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 body shot, jab, body shot. So, now it was going good. So, second round, Nunez came out better in the second round. And it was Nunez trying to step his game up and show, like I said earlier, that he can fight with Javante, showing that, hey man, I ain't no punk, I can fight with the young man. So he was hitting him with a couple good shots and doing his best to cut off the ring and kind of control some of the fight. But what fucked Nunez up is Nunez got cocky. So they got a little clinch going on. And Nunez got cocky, trying to make some gestures to the crowd. And Javante caught him with a left. Bam! Ooh, the crowd went wild. Caught him with like a little left straight, left hook, a little left straight. Bam! Caught him. Crowd went wild because it rocked his ass. It rocked him. It hurt him. His head snapped back. It hurt him. So let me play this video. Because the video won't have to commentate a little better, right? So he hit him with that left. Bam, that left straight. And he rocked his head back, and he hurt him. So he went on the attack. He went throwing his combinations at him. And Nunez was doing a good job in the beginning of kind of blocking them things. And then next thing you know, Javante hit him right down the pipe with another left hook. Bam, hurt his ass real bad again. Then hit him with another left in. Bam! Hurt his ass, and the ref had to jump in and stop it. And some people are saying that the ref stopped him too early. I think the ref did a good job of stopping the fight when he did, because I'm going to play it on my end again. But when Javante caught him, because even before, I'm going to pause this on my end, even before Javante caught him with it, you can see that Nunez was confident in what he was doing. Nunez was starting to get cocky to the level of cockiness in what he was doing, because the second round, he looked way better in the second round than he did in the first round. So he had some control over the second round. He was hitting Javante Davis with some good shots, and he was feeling good about himself until about a minute 43 left in the second round. Javante had to put in the headlock. See. At this minute, and I'm trying to take it slow. So at this minute 43 mark, I hit play. They square up in the middle of the ring. Javante throws a left hook, but misses while Nunez is grabbing him with his left hand and kind of tying him up to kind of, you know, have more control over what's going on in the fight. And then next thing you know, he let him out of that. Well, why he had the, and if you look at Nunez's face, Nunez was trying to placate the crowd and stuff like that. So, bam, Javante caught his ass. And he caught him. He got his attention. He hurt him. He hurt Nunez and caught his attention. Then he threw another left hook right after that, but Nunez had the wherewithal to block it with his right hand. But now Javante is on the attack, and he's throwing lefts and rights and left and rights and rights and rights and left and rights. And so we had about a minute 35 right now. And so Nunez bounced off the rope. Davis is squaring up. He's throwing more combinations. Nunez is blocking some of these things. He's kind of rolled with the punches. And then next thing you know, bam! At about a minute 30, Davis catches him with another left hand right down the pipe. Nunez hits the rope. Then, bam, he caught him with another left hand that wasn't as devastating, but then he came back with a third left hand, which is viciously devastating, and Nunez went rocking, and the ref had to come in it because Nunez really couldn't even stand up on his own at that time. And some people was like, no, they started to fight too early. One of the commentator on the fight that I was watching through Daily Motion, and I don't know who the commentator was, but he was saying that, and I felt where he was coming. He was saying he was disappointed in the fight. And not necessarily that he wanted to see more from Nunez. And so he was disappointed that the fight ended so early, not necessarily disappointed in the way it was fought, but just disappointed in the fight ending early and not being disappointed in the referee for stopping the fight, because the referee needed to stop the fight because, not too long ago somebody died in the ring. He didn't stop the fight because somebody died in the ring not so long ago, but he stopped the fight because Nunez was at a point where he wasn't really defending himself anymore. Like, Nunez was not defending himself anymore. Javante caught him with that left hand, bam, and Nunez was done. Like, Nunez was done. If Javante would have kept hitting him, he'd have just been hitting like hitting cold meat. Catching his ass. So, second round TKO with a minute something left on the clock, and Javante Davis continues his winning ways. So, I guess now Nunez is 21-3 with 19 KOs, and Javante goes to 22-0 with 21 KOs, or the records have improved since then. Because I don't know what the records was when they came into it. But Javante tanked Davis. Hey, man, Davis Lomachenko. We want that Davis Lomachenko fight to happen so soon. We want to see who gonna win that so we can bet that loan, bet that money, bet that time, bet that honey, baby girl, we got to get down. So one time for Tank Davis for whooping Ricardo Nunez's ass. And you know what we say when we see Nunez? Somebody got their whoop. I said, somebody got their whoop. All right. So move on. Let's move on like Maya. Moving on. Moving on. I'll be moving on. So, sad boxing news. A boxer, Maxim Dadashev, dies at the age of 28 of suffering brain injuries and TKO loss. And I saw a video of this the other day where the guy's corner was begging him not to go back out. He was like, bro, I'm going to stop this fight, bro. I can't put you back out there, bro. Please, bro. Please, bro, let me stop the fight, bro. Please, bro. I'm going to stop this fight, bro. I can't let you go back out there. So, Maxim Dadashev, and I apologize for messing his name up, has died as a result of injuries sustained in the Friday night TKO loss. His trainer, Buddy McGirt, and strength coach, Dantes, confirmed to ESPN on Tuesday. Dadashev is survived by his wife and their younger son. Dadashev's wife addressed the untimely death of her husband in a statement provided to CBS. It's with great sadness that I confirmed the passing of my husband, Maxim Dadashev. He was a very kind person who fought until the very end. Our son will continue to be raised by a great man like his father. Lastly, I would like to thank everyone that cared for Maxim during his final days. I ask that everyone please respect our privacy during this very difficult time. Russian Boxing Federation Security General Umar Krimlev said his organization will begin an investigation into the circumstances that led to the death. In addition, Krimlev announced the Federation will support Dadashev's family financially. We lost Maxim Dadashev. I want to do a Russian accent so bad, but I'm going to respect. We lost Maxim Dadashev today, Krimlev said. Our people, we will fully support his family, including financially. We will complete the investigation into the circumstances surrounding this fight. We need to know the truth about what happened. Dadashev of St. Petersburg, Russia, was competing in an IBF junior welterweight title bout eliminated against Zubriel Matias when the bout was stopped by McGirt following the 11th round after his fighter had continued to sustain damage to the head throughout. Great, great guy. He was a trainer's dream, McGirt said, following the loss of Dadashev. If I had two more guys like him, I wouldn't need anybody else because he was truly dedicated to the sport. So, you know how we do with the untimely passing of athletes. I'm going to give us a moment of silence to Maxim Dadashev, his family and friends and loved ones. Definitely, prayers are going up to Dadashev and his family, friends, and stuff. All right, so let's keep this thing moving. Got to keep moving on. So the NBA, the WNBA All-Star Weekend was this past weekend, and it is over. And I'm mad at the WNBA, ESPN, and all the other sports outlets for not being more vocal about it. If I wasn't just keeping up with sports, I wouldn't have known the damn thing about the goddamn ESPN, or not the goddamn ESPN, but the goddamn WNBA All-Star Weekend, goddammit. Matter of fact, Saturday, I just so happened to goddamn just turn on the TV and flip to the right channel to get to the goddamn skills challenge and three-point contest the other goddamn night. What kind of bullshit is that? Right? But anyway, let me give you some updates. Because in the All-Star game that happened on Sunday, it says Team Asia Wilson takes down Team Elena Deladon, and Erica Wheeler wins the MVP. So after a fun few days in Las Vegas, the 2019 WNBA All-Star Weekend is in the books. Diamond DeShields will huddle cute. She's so goddamn cute, Diamond DeShields. She's so pretty. I know I sound like an old man. I don't mean to be all sexual and stuff, but she's so pretty. Diamond DeShields got the action started by winning the Skills Challenge, which was reintroduced to the weekend as part of the first All-Star Friday night since 2006. Later on that night, Shakina Strickland defeated Kayla McBride to win the three-point contest and end the Allie Quigley's two-year reign. Then on Saturday, Team Wilson jumped out to a huge lead and held on for a 129-126 win over Team Deladon in the 16th edition of the All-Star Game. Erica Wheeler, playing in her first All-Star Game, took home MVP after scoring 25 points and tying an NBA All-Star record with 7 three-pointers. Here's a look at everything that happened during the weekend. I don't know why I read that, but hey. So the game was up once again. The league brought back the playground-style format, with Elena Deladon and Asia Wilson serving as captains for the respective squads. That's the same way the NBA does the All-Star games. Wilson still served in her role, but was unfortunately unable to play due to an ankle injury. Her drafting skills paid off, though, as her squad took home the victory. Team Wilson got off to a red-hot start thanks to Odyssey Sims, one time for Odyssey. Her buzzer beat three-pointer. They took a 39-23 lead at the end of the first quarter. Despite multiple slam dunks by Brittany Griner, their 39-point tally was an All-Star game record for points in the quarter, and that only lasted 10 minutes. So it was a festive game. Team Deladon poured in 40 points themselves in the high-scoring second quarter, but they weren't able to cut into the difficult lead due to Erica Wheeler, who was draining three-pointers from all over the place en route to 18 first-half points to lead off scores. Thanks to Wheeler's efforts, Team Wilson took a 77-63 lead to halftime, and they lost. While they lost their quarter scoring record, they did set a new record for points in the half. In the second half, Team Deladon mounted the comeback. Dewana Bonner and Jonquel Jones knocked down a few three-pointers. Neka Ogumike went to work inside as they cut the deficit to just 3 points in the final minute. It proved to be too little too late, however. Willie stepped up to drill a clutch three-pointer with 22 seconds. Bam! To seal not only the win for Team Wilson, but MVP honors. Put your arm up because you just won. So that's what's really going down. So that what happened in the weekend, man. That's what happened in the weekend. NBA All-Star Weekend. WNBA, excuse me. WNBA All-Star Weekend 2019. If you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory. Lately, I've been going through some things that's really got me down. So that's what's up. So that's the WNBA All-Star Weekend. So in addition to that, over the weekend, the 2019 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame inducted its 2019 class. And I just said 2019 twice, but the MLB had their 2019 class inducted over this weekend. So who was in the class? So it says Mariano Rivera, Bowler, Roy Halladay, Bowler. Those are the headliners of the 2019 class. So the Baseball Writers Association of America announced the 2019 Hall of Fame inductees on Tuesday evening with Mariano Rivera, Roy Halladay, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, all elected for enshrinement. According to the MLB Network Baseball broadcast, Rivera is the first player in MLB history to be a unanimous first ballot inductee. Mariano. What a Hall of Fame 2019 class. Former player and current analyst Alex Rodriguez retweeted. Congrats to my brother Mariano Rivera on becoming the first player to be elected unanimously. And he should have been elected unanimously. Come on, man. When Mariano came into the game, you guys know what it is. Hola! He's the epitome of what a closer is. So happy for all four inductees, including my mentor Edgar Martinez, my teammate Mike Mussina, and the late Roy Halladay. One of the best I ever faced. So only four people was inducted. These players will join Lee Smith, Harold Baines, so we got Lee Smith and Harold Baines in the 2019 class, too, so it's six people who were selected by the Today's Game Era Committee to join at the Hall of Fame in December. The enshrinement will take place on Sunday, July 21st in Cooperstown, New York. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, meanwhile, remained under 60% of votes. If you end up to the Hall of Fame, you got to have 75% of the votes. Bonds and Clemens, two of the greatest players in the Hall of Fame, and two of the greatest players in history, they basically not getting counted in due to the steroids and stuff. But, yeah, man, so, you know, Rivera was a no-brainer. So the Yankees closer was 13-time All-Star, five-time champion. In 1999, World Series MVP. He finished in the top five in the Cy Young Award voting on five separate occasions and a impressive mark for a reliever. His 652 saves are the most in MLB history. He's third in career WHIP whip. Something with runners in place. And he registered 50 or more saves in the season twice and 40 more saves in the season nine times. He only got better in the postseason. His 42 playoff saves are easily the most in history, surpassing second place closer Brad Lidge by 24 saves, and his postseason ERA of 0.70 is the best mark in MLB history. God damn. He did all of it using basically just one pitch, that cutter. He really just had one pitch. So, man, Roy Halladay, meanwhile, was one of the game's most dominant starting pitchers in this era for the Toronto Blue Jays and Philadelphia Phillies. The 8-time All-Star, 2-time Cy Young Award winner finished his career with, he would finish his career 203-105. That was his record. A 3.38 ERA, 1.18 whip, and 2,117 strikeouts. He led his league in shutouts four times, 20 overall, in complete games in seven. Seven times, 67 overall, and in his pitch four times, 2,749. He was the top five in Cy Young voting seven times, led his league in wins twice, and threw both a perfect game in the 2010 regular season against the Florida Marlins and a no-hitter that postseason against the Cincinnati Reds. Halladay tragically died in a plane crash in 2017. His wife released a statement on Tuesday regarding his Hall of Fame induction. I ain't going to read that. So, Mike Mussina made his way to the Hall, making him perhaps the most surprising selection of the bunch. Certainly a deserving entrant. He's a five-time All-Star and seven-time Gold Glove winner, and though he's never a Cy Young selection, he did finish top five in the voting six times. The Baltimore Orioles and New York Yankees started pitcher finished his career 270, 153 overall, his record. His ERA was 3.68. He had 1.19 whip and 2,813 strikeouts. He threw 57 complete games, 23 shutouts, 21 postseason starts, going 7-8 in the postseason, 3.42 ERA with 1.10 whip. So, just a little stats and stuff on the folk going to the Hall of Fame. So, man, y'all go ahead and put your hands together for 2019. Major League Baseball Hall of Fame induction. Mariano Rivera, Real Holiday, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, also Harold Baines, Lee Smith. All right. That's what's on. That's what's up. So, NFL Top 100 has started. Every year, NFL players rank who are the best players in the league from 100 to 1. And if you're part of the list, that means you're part of an elite class of ballers. Everybody don't make the list. It's only 100 slots. You got 32 teams with 53 slots. And only 100 people make the squad. So, let's see who's made the squad so far. So at number 100, we got safety Eric Weddle. Number 99, running back Derrick Henry. Number 98, wide receiver Tyler Lockett. Number 97, cornerback Byron Jones of the Cowboys. Number 96, quarterback Carson Wentz. Number 95, cornerback Kyle Fuller. Number 94, tackle Michael Schwartz. Number 93, T.J. Watt, linebacker. 92, Jarrell Casey, defensive tackle. Number 91, Andrew Whitworth, tackle. Number 90, Julian Edelman, wide receiver. Number 89, Devin McCourty, safety. Number 88, Cameron Haywood, defensive tackle. 87, Cam Newton, quarterback. 86, Darius Slay, cornerback. 85, Frank Clark, defensive end. 84, Jarvis Landry, wide receiver. 83, Harrison Smith, safety. 82, Bradley Chubb, linebacker. 81, Trent Williams, tackle. 80, Mark Ingram, running back. 79, Geno Atkins, defensive tackle. 78, Kirk Cousins, quarterback. 77, Tyler Lee Wan, tackle. 76, Robert Woods, wide receiver. 75, Gerald McCoy, defensive tackle. 74, Leighton Vander Esch, Cowboys, linebacker. 73, Stephon Diggs. 72, Jason Kelce, center. 71, C.J. Mosley, linebacker. T.Y. Hilton, wide receiver. 69, Matt Ryan, quarterback. 68, Phillip Lindsay, running back. 67, D. Ford, linebacker. 66, Eric Ebron, tight end. 65, Jason Pierre-Paul, defensive end. 64, Amari Cooper, wide receiver, Dallas Cowboys. 63, Jadeveon Clowney, defensive end. 62, James Conner, running back. 61, Jalen Smith, linebacker, Cowboys. See what I'm doing now? 60, Larry Fitzgerald, wide receiver. 59, Zach Martin, guard, Cowboys. 58, A.J. Green, wide receiver, should be higher. 57, Daniel Hunter, defensive end. 56, Joey Bosa, defensive end. 55, Xavier Howard, cornerback. 54, Calais Campbell, defensive end. 53, Mike Evans, wide receiver. 52, Tyron Smith, tackle, Cowboys. 51, Deshaun Watson, quarterback. 50, Baker Mayfield, quarterback. 49, Myles Garrett, defensive end. 48, Melvin Ingram, defensive end. 47, Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver. 46, Patrick Peterson, a.k.a. Pat P, a.k.a. P-E-D-P, cornerback. 45, Demarcus Lawrence, defensive end, Cowboys. 44, Ben Roethlisberger, quarterback. 43, David Bakhtiari, tackle. 42, Christian McCaffrey, running back. And 41, Cameron Jordan, defensive end. So next week, I have 10 more people for you. I have 10 more people for you next week. That's NFL Top 100 so far. So, pre-rant topics, warm-up, need my warm-up. So, the NBA has begun its investigation into whether salary caps were violated during the free agency that was going on over the summer, right? And then they got a picture of Kawhi out there. Shit. Question we asking is, Kawhi, you got a picture of Kawhi. You see what I did there? You don't see what I did, Kawhi? You think it was funny what I did? He thought it was funny. All right, so the NBA has begun an investigation into how teams handle free agency this summer, focusing on whether improper inducements, your girl like my inducement, were offered to players to circumvent salary cap, according to a person with direct knowledge of the situation. Well, who is this Mickey Ficky person? How'd they get direct knowledge? The issue was raised by multiple team owners at a meeting of the league's board of governors this month in Las Vegas, according to the person who requested anonymity because of a lack of authorization to speak publicly on the subject. We used a bitch then, anonymity. Anonymous Jones. ESPN first reported on the existence of the investigation. There were also multiple reports this month suggesting that Kawhi Leonard's representatives, in arranging his blockbuster move from the Toronto Raptors to the Los Angeles Clippers, had asked for perks that would violate the league's collective bargaining agreement. Kawhi, they're talking about you. What you do in the face of that situation? Right. We laughing at that, man. ESPN commentator Stephen A. Smith, citing people in the NBA circles, said on the air that Leonard's uncle, Dennis Robinson, known in NBA circles as Uncle Dennis, had asked other teams for houses, planes, and guaranteed sponsorship money, Smith added. I have no idea whether this is true or not. That's my Stephen A. Smith. It ain't the best, but it ain't that good at all. Forget y'all. In another report, the Sports Network in Canada said Robinson had asked for things players didn't generally ask for in standard contract negotiations without specifying what those things might be. It is unclear what the scope of the investigation is or whether the league, which declined to comment, is acting on information other than reports in the news media. Right, we got to know what the hell y'all acting on, right? The investigation follows one of the most tumultuous off-seasons in NBA history, with many high-profile players switching teams. It wasn't tumultuous. It was wonderful. The NBA is also exploring whether it needs to change its rules against tampering. Several players committed to signing with the team as soon as free agency negotiation officially opened at 6 p.m. on June 30th, even though teams were not allowed to begin recruiting before then. League rules prohibit players, coaches, and front office executives for enticing an athlete under contract with another team to come play for their franchise. Commissioner Adam Silver and Gold said during an interview on Sports Illustrated in April that he did not think tampering was significantly worse today than it was in the past. But after a spirited Board of Governors meeting, Silver acknowledged that changes might be necessary. He cited increased coverage of the leagues and communications through social media as reasons teams and players might feel pressured to push the established boundaries. I think it's pointless at the end of the day to have rules that we can't enforce. I think it hurts the perception of integrity around the league, Silver said at a news press conference in Las Vegas. He added later, my sense in the room today was, especially when it comes to free agency and the rules around it, that we've got work to do. So, yeah, that's one thing they're saying. It's a lot more, but I ain't going to read it right now. But that's a New York Times article about the NBA investigating into whether tampering happened. I don't really have no evidence to show, but just word on the street. Pookie and Nuck Nuck them said, Y'all out here cheap. Y'all what Pookie them said, y'all out here cheap. So we're going to keep an eye on that story. Anonymous Jones out here talking about somebody cheap. If you want to be somebody, if you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention. So, Steve Kerr. You tripping, Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr, now the article's title of it says, Steve Kerr calls out Anthony Davis for forcing Lakers trade. It's bad for the league. Fuck you, Steve, in this sense, because they're mad that NBA players got the control that they have. If a franchise can trade a player and the player find out while watching TV, then they said one player was traded in the middle of the game. If a player can be traded at any time, how can the player force his trade? Or either give both the players and the franchise the ability to make trades happen or take away the ability to trade from both sides. But what's not going to happen is the teams can trade you or do whatever they want with you. You just have to take it. You can't do nothing. No control over your career. Nope. Not going down. Warriors head coach Steve Kerr has never been afraid of speaking his mind. And that wasn't going to stop with an NBA offseason that saw Anthony Davis force his way from the Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, the drama between the Pelicans, Lakers, and Davis goes back all the way to the trade deadline when Davis made it clear that he wanted out of New Orleans. Fuck that shit, dog. Get me up out of here, bro. The Pelicans didn't make a trade at that time and ultimately took pretty steps to tank the Lakers' chemistry. But Davis was still able to leverage his way out of New Orleans via a Lakers trade ahead of the draft, even with a year remaining on his contract. And according to Kerr, it marks a trend that could be terrible for the league. Bitch, shut up. Davis would have never left the Pelicans if the Pelicans would have did what they need to do to build and win the franchise around. Remember that time the league made Chris Paul go to the clip? Shut up. Well, the Warriors coach said on the Warriors Insider podcast via CBS, and talking more about Anthony Davis, about the Anthony Davis situation. This is my Steve Kerr voice. Well, a guy is perfectly healthy and has a couple of years left on his deal and says, I want to leave. But it's a real problem that the league has to address and that players have to be careful with. When you stand on that dotted line, you owe your effort and your place to that team, that city, to the fans. And then, once the contract runs out, it's completely your right to leave as a free agent. If you sign the contract, then you should be bound to that contract. So tell the goddamn teams that, Steven. Tell the team that if you sign the player to a contract, then you can't just trade them when you want to. You got to keep them and stick it out to the contract run out. Tell the team that, Steve. This ain't no one-way street. This ain't no one-way street, Steve. This ain't back when you played or before that when players didn't have that business savvy. Players got business savvy these days, boy. Don't be mad, boy. Don't be mad, boy, because these players know what time it is, boy, and you ain't know what time it was when you was a player, boy. You just happen to be on the team, boy. Look here, boy. Anybody talking about nothing, boy? You ain't talking about nothing, boy. Shut up, boy. So he continued specifically calling out how Davis forced to trade the Lakers. If you come to an agreement with the team that, hey, it's probably the best for us to part ways, that's one thing. But the Davis stuff was really kind of groundbreaking. And hopefully not a trend because it's bad for the league. No, Steve, what's bad for the league is your outfits are bad for the league, Steve. What's bad for the league is your comments bad for the league. This ain't no goddamn master-ruler relationship. These NBA players ain't no NFL players, Steve. So guess what? They gonna stand up for their rights. And as long as the teams, decide that they want to trade somebody whenever they want to. They trade you when they want to. They cut you when they want to. All the things there. Hey. Make it a two-way street. If the players can't force a trade, then the teams can't just trade you when they want to. How do you want it? How do you feel? I don't want this player no more, so I'm finna trade his ass, and they got a pill. Nah, dog. If you can trade me, then I can trade you. That's where we at with it. Don't be mad, Steve. Don't be mad. A similar scenario could have been tied to Paul George's trade to the Clippers, to team up with Kawhi Leonard if the league doesn't take action. We can see more stars leveraging trades with multiple years remaining on contracts. So, bad for the league, my ass, dog. This is good for the league. This is good. Now, you know how excited people are to watch the NBA this coming up season because the landscape is evened out. We really don't have a definitive clue of who will win the NBA championship. So being able to force some trades help this happen. Of course, KD leaving and Kawhi leaving, but more so KD leaving. But nah, Steve, this ain't no one-way street. This ain't just the players. The owners coming in. Hey, players, bend over. Take this dick in your ass because we're fucking you over today, buddies. Nah, dog. The players are like, hold on, Woody. Woody, hold on. It's going to be some two-way fucking Woody. Pause. But nah, dog. The days of players just sitting around and just being pawns in the game is over. A pawn is only a pawn because it believes he's a pawn. But a pawn can make significant impact on the chessboard if he realizes full potential past just being a pawn. That's what these NBA players are doing. They're realizing their full potential past just being a regular NBA player, and they're coming out dropping their nuts and taking care of business on and off the court and making sure that they are not just pawns on the board. You can't just make me a checker piece, king me, and just take me off the board. Nah, see, dog, it don't run like that, see, dog. Nah, see, dog, it don't rock like that, see, dog. So, Steve Kerr, if you don't like that these players are gaining more control over their career, won't you go back to Europe, Steve Kerr? Won't you go back to Europe if you got the problem with how these players are doing things in this United NBA of America? Won't you go back to Europe, Steve Kerr? How about that? Make the NBA great again. Why? How? Give the players they control that they're supposed to have. I commend the NBA players for not being like the NFL players, for having a better collective bargaining agreement and making sure that they can get themselves some victories. So one time for the players and zero times for Steve Kerr. Shut up, Steve Kerr. But guess what, y'all? It's time for my weekly rant. And I'm getting on this greasy face looking at boy, fake ass Nation of Islam dressing ass boy, ugly ass bow tie having ass boy, looking like your name Philbert face ass boy, stealing money and trying to get away with it ass boy, looking like your suit was made out of couch cushions ass boy. So, what's this boy's name? Hamer has been accused of having a third-party shuffle hundreds of thousands of dollars filing false invoices. So, student, Southern University fired former band leader Nathan Hamer. F you, Nathan! Last summer, as he was accused of accepting personal kickbacks in order for band performances. A year later, the scope of his alleged illicit fundraising is coming to light. What's done in the dark may come light. Don't let them get that pussy tonight. I don't know why I sung that together. It just went with the sunny weather. So, Hamer is accused of pocketing $293,000 in funds via an unauthorized third party, according to a report released on Monday. The report issued by legislative auditor Daryl Pooperpa also stated that Hamer submitted false invoices to the school for reimbursement. That amount totaled in $46,719 from Southern University. The Southern University System Foundation and the Southern University Alumni Foundation. We determined these invoices were false by meeting with the vendors whose names were on the invoices, the report says. In each case, the vendors told us the invoices were not theirs. Audit showed that Hamer used a third-party company to collect fees that were previously collected by the university. The company sent $84,708 to Southern from January through September of 2015, then began directing the payments directly to Hamer. Those payments sent via 35 wire transfers totaled $293,317, according to the review. Mr. Hamer's supervisor at the time of the contract told us he was not aware of this contract or Mr. Hamer's activities was active until after his employment at SU had ended, according to the review. The full report has been turned over to the state, local, and federal authorities. Hamer was named band director in 2018 and was removed last year because his motherfucking ass was stealing in his ugly-ass suit that he got on in this picture with his ugly-ass bow tie and his greasy-ass face, and his edge ain't even straight. You was a bitch for stealing from the school because the motherfucking school used that to give these motherfucking kids a motherfucking education, and your ass with the weak-ass eyebrows gonna be stealing money, $293,000 worth of money, that weak-ass beard you got, that weak-ass edge you got. You look like you're high in this picture, you fucking drug dealer. If you lie, you steal. If you steal, you cheat. If you cheat, you kill. And you a liar, stealer, cheater, and a killer, according to old black people logic. Because you stole. You stole and you lied. So that's two of them. You was a stealing and you lied. And you're cheating. So what's next? Killing. That's the only thing left on your resume to kill. You look like you got it in your eyes with your weak-ass facial expression that you got on here, your little weak-ass smile, little half a smile with your little Barack Obama Newport lips, looking like you've been smoking blacks, Newports, and weed all in the same day. With your weak-ass suit on and your weak-ass pen on your suit and the weak-ass pocket square that's a different color red from your weak-ass bow tie and your weak-ass pen. I bet your ass got on the red belt, some red shoes, too, with your weak-ass outfit. I hear stealing from these kids, your weak-ass boy, your weak-ass gray hairs, and that weak-ass beard that you got, too, around here looking like your ass was a janitor last year. You're looking like your daddy named Clyde, looking like you grew up running numbers and on malt liquor for breakfast and shit out here. Gonna be out here stealing from these kids. The band director, my ass, your ass was a thieving director. You directed your hands in these motherfucking bank accounts. That's what your ass was out here directing. Your ass wasn't directing nothing good in life. Your ass was directing money right into your bank account, you thieving mother scutter. Why are you gonna go and do that, huh? Why you want to go and steal from the school that got to provide the shit for the kids? Nah, you don't want to do, right? You want to go and steal from the kids. Huh, Wayman? Wayman in the water. Wayman in the water, children. Weak-ass Wayman. Weak-ass Wayman. Why you stealing, Wayman? Wayman. Wayman. Why are you stealing, Wayman? Huh? Huh? Answer me, boy. Huh? 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 It's your weak ass. Ex-Southern band leader. I'm a band leader, and I steal from the band. I'm calling him Wayman. His name Hamer. Nathan Hamer. Your middle name, Wayman. God damn it. Your middle name ain't gonna be Wayman, and I'm gonna call you Wayman. Nathan Wayman Hamer, Nathan Wayman Hamer is a thief, a liar, and a cheater. So there's only one more thing you can do. If you lie, you cheat. If you cheat, you steal. If you steal, you kill. God damn it. Huh? Huh? Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong, Hamer. Hamer. Wayman Hamer. Nathan Wayman Hamer. Why are you stealing, boy? You's a bitch. You's a bitch. And everybody who a part of your system is a bitch. Everybody who helps you. Everybody who turned a blind eye to everything that's going on. Y'all some bitches stealing from the kids, huh? That's how we do, huh? That's how we make it in this world, right? Stealing from the future, stealing from the tomorrows, right? That's how we do it, right? We're going to steal from the tomorrows, huh, Wayman? Huh? Soft-ass Wayman. You ain't shit, Wayman. I hope you never get another job in the university system ever again, boy. You have tore your drawers with ever working with university systems or any kind of educational system because your ass be stealing. But I don't know. It's that one lady that used to work around here, used to work in the same realm as me. She keep getting caught stealing. They keep getting jobs. I don't understand. So some of these Negroes, he might got bougie connections. He look bougie. That's who. He got a bougie suit. Got a bougie bow tie. His edge bougie. His mustache is big bougie. His eyebrows bougie. His tie bougie. His pocket square, that's a whole different color red from his tie. And his pin on his jacket. And they look like they made his suit jacket out of damn the same material that they make the car seats. That's what they look like. Goddamn Wayman. Nathan Wayman Hamlin, you was a bitch. You got caught stealing. $293,000, boy. You know how many students I could have helped that boy? $293,000. Boy, look here, man. Look here. Redirect your energy, boy. Hamlin. Redirect your energy, boy. You was a fuck, boy. And that's all I got to say about that, man. I'm Joseph Ward. Remember, you can support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon by going to patreon.com/TheFix. Help your homeboy out. Help me get more of the resources that I need so I can interview more people, give you more information, just make this show more interactive and live for you. So once again, patreon.com/TheFix. Go to the Freedom Train website. Check me out at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Learn more about me, the Enigma Scepter. Oh, yeah, one time for Enigma Scepter, September. Enigma, I was a guest on the Enigma Sep Hour, so that episode is up now on YouTube and Freedom Train website. So the Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Go to the Enigma Sep Hour tab. Also on the Enigma September YouTube channel, so you can see the live interview. We had so much fun. We talked about date naps and sex and all types of stuff. We wild out. We was on that Crown Apple. Oh, we got it in. We wild out. So check that out, and the podcast will be available on all the podcast networks tomorrow. I mean, today, actually, today. So check me out one time for Enigma September. Definitely had a great time, my brother. And thank you for everything you do for your podcast right here on the network. So y'all go check that out. One time for Pat and the whole squad for the Freedom Train Network. One time for the PAX Inc. family. One time for everybody who rocked and my hunger at the Molly Charles' birthday this weekend. So happy birthday to you, beautiful. And, hey, man, everybody else, I don't know what to tell you, but if your grandma smell like bacon grease, I probably still hit that, though. I don't know. But Joseph Ward, man, from my hood to your hood, from everybody else's hood, this is the Fix Sports Podcast, man. I catch y'all on the other side where it really goes down.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless.